It's 4:06. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Gene Purcell. Coming up, we'll learn why the head of Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce is promoting right-to-work legislation, a higher gas tax, and other reforms.
Wisconsin, like the rest of the country, is getting more diverse. According to forecasts by the Census Bureau, by 2043, whites will be in the minority, or less than 50% of the population.
Much of that increase in diversity is coming from the Latino community. Between 2000 and 2010, the Latino community grew by 74% in Wisconsin, and for the first time this year, they are the largest minority group in the state.
As diversity in the state and country grows, many of the places where it's most obvious are in more suburban and rural areas, not big cities.
So, for example, in Wisconsin's Trempealeau County, less than 1% of the population was Hispanic in 2000. By 2010, it was almost 6%. That's a 595% increase in just 10 years.
So as diversity grows in largely white places, how are Wisconsin's communities adapting? We'll be looking at that question. Here with us now is USA Today reporter Paul Overberg. He focuses on data and demographics and recently published a report looking at diversity growth in every county in the country. Also joining us later is Trempealeau County family living educator Catherine Emanuel. Paul, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
Paul, in your report, you found that for the first time, chances are that the next person an American meets is most likely not to look very much like them. How did you figure that out?
We've used for about 20 years now an index we call the USA Today Diversity Index that basically uses the percentages of people in an area to calculate that. And in census 2010, we found that the national average had reached 55 on this scale from 0 to 100. So basically, on average, two random Americans are more likely than not to be different.
Now, you've been calling this the second great wave of immigration. How big has the second wave been?
Oh, it's as big in some ways as the first one, which ran from maybe 1880 to 1920 or so. It started in earnest in the 70s, and it's still rolling along. And there are as big a share of the country is now foreign-born as happened at the peak of the last great wave in the teens century ago.
If we take a look at the country right now and take into account the second wave of immigration, where would we see it the clearest?
Well, it started more clearly on the coast in the 80s, but then clearly in the last 10 to 15 years, it's been, for a variety of reasons, moving to smaller and more interior places all over the country. It happened a lot in the interior parts of the Southeast for a variety of economic reasons in the 90s, and it's reached all areas of the upper Midwest in the last 10 years.
Why are minority groups and largely Hispanics moving to suburban areas, to rural areas, as opposed to these big city centers, which used to be the magnet point?
Well, it's for one thing, there's an interstate highway system now that wasn't there 50 or 75 or 100 years ago, although maybe in the 1880s that's what the railroads started to be, and in some ways that's sort of the diversity patterns in old immigrants you can still see lines up along rail lines. But there's also economic reasons. Most immigrants come here for jobs. And so, for instance, when we see this strongly, when there's a cluster of jobs that get opened up in an industry that Americans that's hard, dirty work, like often slaughterhouses, you'll see a cluster of immigrants pop up there. It's happened in a variety of places in all over the Midwest in the last 20 years.
This story, it really hits home with me personally. My father was Mexican, my mom is white, and I lived in rural Wisconsin for a few years when I was growing up. And, you know, this was a while ago, and people would be curious all the time about what my background was because I didn't quite look like them. They hadn't, I guess, seen a lot of Latinos before. How much is that changing in Wisconsin today?
It's changing a lot, especially in the western half of the state. Wisconsin is still below average in diversity as a state compared to the rest of the country. And there's some pockets that are fairly diverse, perhaps around Milwaukee. But a lot of, especially western Wisconsin, diversity is still a very new thing. And the levels are still pretty low. On our index from 0 to 100, they may still be around 10 or 20. So it's a 10 or 20% chance that the next person you meet would be different. But those have jumped a lot in the last 10 years in a lot of those places, and Trumbull County is one of those examples. So if you've lived there and that's where what you're used to, all of a sudden it looks very different, even though to somebody from a big city it looks pretty monochromatic.
Well, Paul, thank you so much for joining us.
Okay, thanks for having me.
We've been speaking with Paul Overberg, USA Today reporter, focusing on data and demographics. And we now welcome Catherine Emanuel, Trempealeau County Family Living Educator with the University of Wisconsin Extension. Catherine, thanks for joining us.
Hey, good afternoon.
Well, based on your perspective, can you describe for us what the growth and diversity, I gather largely in the Hispanic community, has been like in Trempealeau County?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, first I'll say that I'm pretty new in the county as an educator. I actually live right outside of the county, so I don't speak as a county resident, rather someone who works with and for people here in the county. And what we're hearing and what we're seeing is that the population increase is definitely off the charts in the state, you know, as compared to not even other counties, but also around the country. The rate of growth in Trempealeau County is actually the fifth largest across the entire country from the last census count. And so really what we're seeing is what your previous speaker was talking about is kind of a clustering around jobs and economy. So, for instance, when you see any community that's got some type of meat factory or meat company, you will typically see a large increase of immigrants. And so here in Trempealeau County, we have Golden Plump, and there are a lot of immigrants that work there. We also have another manufacturing company, furniture company here in town that's also has a large immigrant workforce. So what happens is people kind of cluster around these jobs, families come, and then people either think they're going to work here for 5 years and make a bunch of money and go back to Mexico, or they do what a lot of people do is life happens and you fall in love and you meet somebody and you have kids, or maybe surprise, you had a kid, you weren't planning on that, but now you've got kids here. And so the people that I meet and that I get to work with here in the county are the Latinos that I see are working in healthcare, working as volunteer firefighters, working in the factories, owning businesses, whether it's retail or mercado or panderia, where you can find fresh groceries or the baked goods, clothing stores, working in the schools. And that's just kind of the job. And then there's all the other stuff that happens out of, you know, our work and, you know, communities of family, faith, and social time. So
we're speaking right now with Catherine Emanuel, Trempealeau County Family Living Educator with the University of Wisconsin Extension. We're talking about how some of Wisconsin's rural and largely white communities are adapting to growing diversity.
And we'd like to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Has your community seen significant growth in diversity in your part of Wisconsin? And how has the community adjusted? What has the response been like? Give us a call at 800-642-1234, or you can post comments on the Central Time Facebook page.
Coming up, we'll take your calls. But first, it's the year-end membership drive.
That's right. I'm Gene Purcell here with Cheryl Gasser, and we are in our year-end membership drive on listener-supported Wisconsin Public Radio. Your support is vital to all of the programs in WPR, and that is why we are here to ask for your gift right now. As 2014 comes to an end and we look forward to starting 2015 on a strong financial foundation, we need your support, your financial support, to make it happen. You can make the programs you rely on, programs like Central Time, possible when you make that gift at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Now, last hour we received 19 pledges. Thank you so much for your support and for helping us to exceed our hourly goal last hour. And this hour, we have an exciting new member challenge.
We sure do. For each brand new member who pledges, a pair of anonymous donors are going to give us an extra $100. This will be good for up to 10 new members of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's a great challenge, and it is those members' way of encouraging you to become a supporter of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Couldn't be a better time to become a new member of Wisconsin Public Radio. And don't forget, when you pledge, you will be entered to win two tickets to go on a WPR trip. Donate any amount during our year-end membership drive right now, and you could travel to Washington, D.C., experience the rich culture and food of France, or see Alaska's beautiful coastline.
So we've got that challenge, and we've got that possibility of your winning a fabulous trip, a couple of great reasons to become a new member of Wisconsin Public Radio with your pledge of any amount at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Now, you have probably found yourself hovering near the radio, drawn into a great discussion here on Central Time. You need to get somewhere in the afternoon, but the discussion, the conversation is just too interesting to ignore. You appreciate the guests' knowledge, the callers' views, and the great questions that Gene and Veronica and Rob ask of the guests and the callers. Because that's happened to you when you're listening to Central Time, make your pledge of support at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And you can make yourself feel extra good when you donate to WPR during this pledge drive. Just choose Food for 40 as your thank you gift when you give $10 a month or more at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. And when you choose Food for 40, 40 meals will be provided to people in need through area food banks.
This membership drive, we're having a drawing for a trip of your choice to D.C., France, or Alaska. When you give, you're automatically entered. You don't have to pledge to participate. You can send a postcard with your name, address, email, and telephone number to WPR Trip Drawing, 821 University Avenue, Madison, Wisconsin, 53706. Enter by sending a postcard, or better yet, by making a pledge right now.
You can make that pledge right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. Hi, I'm Gene Purcell, back with Cheryl Gasser, and we are here asking for your support of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is your gift of $10 or $15 a month. The amount that you choose, that's the right amount.
And whether you're already a member or you're making your first ever pledge, anyone can become a sustainer. Let us know what monthly amount works for you and whether you want to have that come from your credit card or your bank account.
It's really that easy. It sounds easy, and it is. And because once it's set up, your membership automatically renews, so you never have to wonder if it's that time of the year to make your pledge or not. It's already set in place. So start your sustaining membership right now, WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
You might think that Wisconsin Public Radio operates largely with tax dollars. We do indeed get funding from the federal government and from the state, but listener contributions make up the single largest source of our income.
And what that means as the single largest source of our income, it means that your support is vital to keeping Wisconsin Public Radio financially healthy and on the air. So now that you know just how important listener support is to Wisconsin Public Radio, we're asking you to make a pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
New members are so very important because without you, we would not be able to increase and improve our services as we do every single year. And when you make your first ever gift right now, it shows that you're willing to stand up and be counted as the next member in our WPR community.
And that's right, because you care enough to listen. Now we're asking you to support your source for meaningful radio. Now, if you've never given before, make your first gift of $5 a month or whatever amount is best for you at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You've made a great habit out of listening to WPR. Now make a habit out of donating. It's a good habit, a great habit, a habit you can be proud of. So get started today. You can help with your pledge of any amount at WPR.org.
And become a member right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. And don't forget, we've got that challenge. And when you make that pledge as a new member, you'll help WPR get an extra $100 for each new member up to 10 new members. It's a great time to make your pledge.
And as an added bonus for your pledge of any amount at all today, you'll be entered into that drawing to win two tickets on an upcoming WPR trip. Sustainers, you are automatically entered, so good luck to you.
And so during this pledge drive, during this break, a chance to do two really good things at the exact same time. But you've got to start the process. We can't do this part without you. You've got to initiate that process of making that financial pledge. Go to our website. It's at WPR.org. It'll take just a few minutes. Or if you'd like, give us a phone call, 888-202-2552. And thank you for your support. This is Central Time. I'm Gene Purcell.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. We're back with Catherine Emanuel, Trempealeau County Family Living Educator with the University of Wisconsin Extension. We're talking about how some of Wisconsin's rural and largely white communities are adapting to growing diversity. Trempealeau County is an example of that growing diversity in rural Wisconsin. From the years 2000 to 2010, the Hispanic population grew by 595%, according to census data.
And we'd like to hear from you, too, at 800-642-1234. Are you a member of a minority group that is here in rural Wisconsin? What's that adjustment been like? How has the community responded to you? And how are your needs different, or somehow different, I guess, is the good word, from what you see elsewhere in that community? Call us at 800-642-1234, or you can also post comments on the Central Time Facebook page.
And Catherine, we're talking about what brings different people. In this case, we're seeing a large Latino population moving to Trempealeau County. You have a personal story that gets at these same trends. Can you share that with us?
Yeah, I do. And sometime we'll have to swap some more stories. I have a similar background that you do, Veronica. I'm half Mexican and I'm half Irish. And my father is Irish and is actually the one who came here to the States in the late 70s. My mother is 100% Mexican, and I grew up pretty close in that side of the family. And my great-grandmother, Nicolasa, came when she was from central Mexico in about 1920 or so. And she came, and she got married to a gentleman by the name of Abraham. They had 9 children, and Abraham tried starting his own business. He had owned a pool hall, which he apparently got caught with one cigarette and some alcohol and a gun, and he went to jail. And so that was kind of fun to read about in the newspaper that I found. But Nicolás actually lost Abraham. He died in an accident, or some people think he was murdered because he owed some money. And this was when my grandmother was then just 9 years old. And so Nicolasa, who was then living in St. Paul, moved most of the children to the West Coast and moved to California and started working at a poultry factory. And she was one of the people picking off the feathers off the chickens, and she worked in a canning factory. And so when I now working here as a professional in a community that has kind of a similar demographic of people moving for economic opportunity, working in a meat factory, I really think a lot about my family and who are those people who were the glue, the connectors, those networkers and the bridge makers to people like my grandma, people like my great-grandma, or people like my mother who my mother and my grandmother were born here in the States, yet still dealt with what it meant to be Mexican and to kind of balance those identities with kind of more of the dominant culture of mainstream America.
And so a long history in your family. For me, I remember the first time that I met someone who was half Mexican and half German, and it was a big moment for me. Mm-hmm. And now things are really changing. In Trempealeau, mm-hmm. where you live, do you get the sense that the Hispanic community is welcome, is been being being included in all different aspects of the community?
Yeah, so I'll answer it by saying I'm hesitant to speak for other people's experiences. I think that what we ought to be asking is when we see people and we build relationships, those are good pathways to open. I guess, so not speaking on behalf of anybody or kind of a group of people, the observations that I have is that there's kind of a mix of, one, maybe people still aren't being seen. And so when we're looking at major community issues or public policy issues, making sure that we're really looking at the data. So, for example, in Trempealeau County, they just had a year-long moratorium on sand, and part of the moratorium was to do a study. So part of that study was to really look at kind of sand mining operations and what is the proximity to vulnerable populations. Some of that research showed that there were a high level of children and also Latinos who lived close to those mining operations. So really looking at kind of the long view of is there anybody who might be vulnerable and making sure we're making strategic decisions that's best for the community. So seeing so sometimes people not being seen, not seeing the data, not seeing people, to people who see this all the time. You know, there's communities in Trempealeau County where you can't go to it and not know that something's happening. So, for instance, you drive down Main Street in Arcadia, you'll see two or three mercados, which is the grocery store, you'll see a beautiful, wonderful panderia. You can go get fresh pan dulce or sweet bread. You can go to a couple places and buy clothes, sockers, dresses for your quinceañera or other cultural celebrations. And so we see also these taquerias are popping up in other parts of the county, not just the main city that has a large amount of Latinos living there. And that's the same city where Golden Plump and the furniture company are located at, Ashley Furniture. So we're really, I guess it's kind of a balance that I see. If some people are being seen and then others, it's, you know, you'd have to live under a rock to not know what's happening.
In 2006, the mayor of Arcadia and Trempealeau wanted to make English the official language of the city and tried to ban flying other nations' flags without also flying the American flag. That didn't happen, but it sounds like there have been some growing pains along the way. What has the response been from the people who were longtime residents there, largely Caucasian people?
Yeah, so I wasn't here in 2006, so I can't speak to that. What I hear is that there was a really strong pushback, really from employers who, you know, said, listen, we can't treat each other this way, and this is not going to be, this policy, these proposals are not helpful, and so we really want to be making policies that are going to really impact the family.
And how about today? How are people responding today?
Well, I think there's a curiosity there. There's some people who see Latinos is kind of another immigrant group that comes in, whether it's Scandinavian or Irish or Germans. And so I see people who are kind of old-timers in the community who say, oh, we know immigrants. We've been doing this for a long time. And then some people who are kind of nervous and afraid to ask questions. So one of the things that I think is really important to do as an educator and as somebody involved in the community is to think about how do we make meaningful connections around some of the silences or the questions that we have, and how do we start building resilience that's going to last for many generations for new immigrants to connect with the main mainstream part of the community and really help make those connections so that people can thrive for many generations and not just kind of live in wonder and kind of live in the shadows.
Catherine, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
We've been speaking with Catherine Emanuel, Trempealeau County Family Living Educator with the University of Wisconsin Extension, about growing diversity in some of Wisconsin's largely white places.
Coming up after the news, we'll talk to the head of Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce about their ideas to make Wisconsin a more business-friendly state.
And don't forget, it's our year-end membership drive, a chance for you to support these great conversations with your pledge of any amount. You can make that pledge, do something you'll feel good about at WPR.org or by calling 888-202-2552. And thank you.